Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, the dates have been set after sitting silent for many years. The historic Millstream Speedway is scheduled to roar back to life next month. It's all thanks to the dedication and hard work of the track's new owners, along with a small army of passionate fans. Also this morning, Senator Sherrod Brown was one of the few Democrats who supported then-President Trump's tariffs on Chinese goods a few years back. Now he shares his reaction to Joe Biden's decision to slap even more tariffs on Chinese tech and energy imports. And we have another collection of tasty recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, May 17th, 2024. Have you ever asked someone to do you a favor knowing that they probably don't really want to do it? How do you convince someone to do something for you when you know that they are not necessarily inclined to help you out? You kill them with kindness, right? A new research study out of UCLA suggests that people use the word please as a secret weapon. The study found that people are more likely to mind their manners and use the word please when they believe that someone will otherwise say no to their request. Have you ever done this? You've been exceedingly polite when you know that you're going to ask someone to do something that either A, they don't want to do, or B, that they might feel uncomfortable doing for one reason or another. Researchers actually analyzed over 17 hours of recorded video in which over 1,000 observed requests, people asking other people to do things, people use the word please just 7% of the time. Which tells me we are not necessarily very polite by nature. We don't use the word please as often as we should. People are more likely to say please if someone had declined a similar request in the past or if the person that they were asking was busy with some other task. If someone is busy with something and you ask them to drop what they're doing and help you out, then that's another occasion when you would use the word please. What they point out, the researchers say, this could also mean that when we hear the word please, we might assume that the other person thinks that we don't want to help them. This is the flip side of that, which is kind of interesting. In the wrong context, according to the researchers, in the wrong context, saying please may actually run the risk of sounding pushy or dubious about another's willingness to help out. And if you really think about it, have you ever said please and then been kind of uncomfortable about it, thinking maybe you were being pushy? Yeah, that is a real thing. I just thought that was really interesting. So when I say please bear with me through the final day of the week and what has been a very long week for me, please, I don't want to sound pushy. But anyway, it has. It has been a long week, and I don't know why that is the case, but ever since Tuesday, I've been looking forward to the end of the week. Just get me through the week. Elsewhere, some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. The first things you need to know this morning, very important research. According to this research out of Germany, men in Ecuador have the largest you know what, of any males on the planet. Men in Ecuador are the most blessed, according to German research. Cameroon comes in second place. So Ecuador, Cameroon, followed by Bolivia, Sudan, and Haiti. The top five. And if you're wondering, the United States places 60th overall among the world's nations. Men in countries with higher obesity rates tend to be lower down on the list. So that is one of the reasons why the U.S. is in 60th place. It's very important stuff. I want to make sure that we pass along all of the important things you need to know this morning. 60th, really? 60th overall. Okay. moving on here. McDonald's in the news once again this morning. You remember yesterday the big news was they were rolling out a new value meal at Mickey D's, although the word is that they will be taking away the free drink refills at McDonald's restaurants. That's the trade-off. You get a new value meal, but you may no longer get free drink refills at McDonald's in the future. This is another item from the McDonald's PR folks. Apparently, beginning next week, May 21st specifically, McDonald's is adding something new to their McFlurry lineup. It is a new Grandma McFlurry. That's right, a Grandma McFlurry. In honor of grandmothers everywhere, it features crunchy candy pieces and a blend of syrup designed to inspire nostalgia. The fast food chain says this latest addition to their menu is sweet, just like grandma. Sweet, sweet treat, just like grandma. Starts May 21st, hits the menu May 21st for a limited time only. Big, big news. This morning, we're just all kinds of really important and very significant news here this morning. This also is big news, very good news, actually. New report from the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics finds that the number of overdose deaths is down year over year for the first time in 5 years. Preliminary data shows about 107,500 people died from drug overdoses last year. That is way too many. You know, even one is way too many, obviously, but that's 3,500 less than in 2022. It is the first year-over-year decline in 5 years. Although, despite the drop, overdose deaths in 2023 were still almost double the number from 5 years ago. So we have taken a step in the right direction, but after taking many steps back. So all told, we're much further behind where we were 5 years ago. We're much worse off in terms of overdose deaths than we were 5 years ago, but we are better than we were last year, according to the CDC. Synthetic opioids like fentanyl involved in nearly 70% of those overdose deaths. So, but a little bit of good news, and when it comes to the war on drugs, we'll take the good news wherever we can get it, I suppose. And lastly, this morning, among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. I know that we are nowhere near Christmas. We haven't even reached the halfway point of the year yet. However, Hallmark has announced its first Hallmark Christmas experience set for later this year. The greeting card and media company will host the event outside of their headquarters in Kansas City, Missouri, and will aim to bring all the charm of a Hallmark movie town, to bring all the charm of a Hallmark movie town square to life. So if you've ever watched one of those Hallmark movies on TV and wished that you could magically transport yourself right there to the middle of the town square in one of these idyllic Christmas-themed towns, now you can. The event will invite guests to be merry, make memories, and find holiday magic together, according to a Hallmark press release. The event will be free. That's the good news. It will be free. It'll run every weekend starting November 29th up to the weekend right before Christmas, ending December 23rd. Activities At the event will include a magical Christmas market featuring event-exclusive Hallmark products and one-of-a-kind gifts created by Hallmark artisans and other seasonal merchants, as well as festive food and drinks, ice skating, gift options, and gift wrapping stations. So it is just going to be a holiday overload, a Hallmark holiday overload. The event will also include a nightly Christmas tree lighting. According to Lindsay Roy, the Senior Vice President of Brand Development for Hallmark, creating ways to help people celebrate and connect is at the very core of our brand DNA, especially during the holiday season. We are so excited to bring this uniquely Hallmark experience to life and can't wait to watch people find joy and make memories together. According to the press release, Hallmark fans can also elevate their experience with exclusive ticketed activities. So it's free, but if you want to do some of these really special things, that will cost extra. Things like events and photo ops with beloved Hallmark stars, workshops with Hallmark artists, elevated dining experiences, and breakfast with Santa, among other things. Are you excited? Are you all kinds of excited for Christmas already? Oh boy! You ever wanted to drop yourself in the middle of a Hallmark movie? This is your opportunity. So there you go, some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. It'll be cloudy today, some showers possible, a high in the middle 70s. A chance of showers tonight, a low in the mid-60s. The city of Findlay put up the hometown hero banners along Main Street, and they'll be up for Memorial Day and the 4th of July. This batch of banners includes 106 in total and 18 new banners. Mayor Christina Mern says the city recognizes the great sacrifice that our military members make in serving our country.
The city is proud to continue the tradition that we began a couple years ago of having hometown hero banners displayed. New ones are incorporated as we receive them, and then we rotate through our banners. Fortunately, we actually have too many banners to display, and so we incorporate them as we can.
The hometown hero banners include active, retired, and deceased service members. Get more details on the city's hometown hero banner program in the story on our website. A hearing on the future of Ohio House Bill 68 has been delayed.
A hearing was supposed to happen this week, but it will now take place the week of July 15th. This means a temporary restraining order on the new law has been extended until then. A lawsuit was filed against the bill after the General Assembly overrode the governor's veto. The law would ban health care for transgender youth and also stop trans athletes from playing sports.
ONN's Angela Ann reporting. The state of Ohio is installing 22 new electric vehicle charging stations across the state.
Each will have restrooms and a place to purchase food and drinks. The money is coming from the bipartisan infrastructure law that President Joe Biden signed into law back in 2021. Construction is expected to start in late 2024.
ONN's Tracy Townsend reporting. The Findlay-Hancock County Chamber of Commerce is now accepting applications for the Hancock Leadership Class of 2025. The Chamber's Hancock Leadership Program provides a unique learning experience by preparing community leaders through a dynamic learning experience to serve the Findlay-Hancock County area. There's more information about the program and a link to the application in the story on our website. Don't forget, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, the new proprietors of Millstream Speedway have announced the dates for their return to racing later this year. Co-owner Beth Cogley joins us this morning with more on the preparation for the rebirth of one of the region's most storied venues. Beth, talk a little bit about all of the work that has had to be done in order to bring the Speedway back to life. Obviously, you know going in that it's going to be a big undertaking, but did you anticipate just how much work would be involved in this?
We did know. We've lived close to the track for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so we were aware of how it had decayed mm-hmm. over time. And so we were pretty sure we knew what we were getting ourselves into.
But despite the challenges and obviously the expense of doing all of this, and the times when I'm sure the "can we really do this" question crept into your mind, it's worth it because of all of the history there.
That's absolutely the reason we did this. We really want to honor all those who came before us, who made this track what she was, and all the great names who have raced here, but all the little guys too. And every story that we've heard of, you know, "I grew up on the hill in turn two," or "we spent every Sunday night coming out and watching my uncle race."
Yeah.
Those are the people that we're doing this for.
Yeah. What has been the biggest challenge in getting this ready to go and to the point where you can actually hold races again?
Well, this year it's been the weather. But I would definitely say it was the time situation. Mm-hmm. We decided to buy this in August of last year, or that's when this actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we had originally planned to wait until August of 24 for our first race, so that, you know, we'd have a full year to really sit and take care of things, get it to where we wanted it to be. And then when Ohio Sprint Speed Week came up again, and the changes due to the high limits racing and things like that, we definitely knew that we couldn't say no to the June 14th date.
Yeah. Well, I've been told that that's one of the biggest challenges for those who have tried to resurrect the Speedway in the past, that it's difficult to find dates that area race teams don't already have filled on their schedule.
That is true. And we were very lucky because we have some relationships, for instance, with the Great Lakes Sprint Series.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were able to work with them to find that date in August. But also with Ohio Sprint Speed Week being what it is, and then our partnership with Rich and Shelley Farmer from Fremont Speedway,
mm-hmm.
They've definitely made it much easier, I guess I would say, to get us to the point where we are and get us to the opening.
You know, that is a good point, because I know that the racing community is a very close-knit community. And, you know, while there is always competition among different tracks, there's definitely that sense of everybody in it together, and everybody wants to see this speedway succeed just like every other speedway.
Absolutely. We've seen nothing but support and encouragement from all the other track owners and promoters that we've talked to.
And as we mentioned, much of that is because of all of the history that has been made at Millstream Speedway over the years, and now hopefully making some new history. As we mentioned, you have announced the dates for three events this year, June, August, and October. Is that going to be the extent of the track activity this year, or do you expect to add more events?
That will be the extent for this year. As I said, we are partnering with Fremont Speedway and using a lot of their people as well. So mm-hmm. we did have some limited opportunities for dates there. But we also are hoping, we're kind of calling it the good, better, best model. We're going to get open in June. Things are still going to be a little rough around the edges. But in August, we'll be a little bit better. And by October, we hope to be in really good shape, and then continue to improve in the years to come.
So setting those realistic expectations. And what has been the reaction from the local racing community, the racers themselves, the teams themselves? A lot of anticipation, I would imagine.
Absolutely. One of the biggest bits of excitement that we've had is the removal of the inside concrete wall. Pretty much every racer we've spoken to has cheered that disappearance there. It definitely makes things a lot easier for the drivers to have a place to escape to the infield if there's a problem, rather than either hitting that concrete wall or having to stop on the track because of an issue.
So now you're less than a month out. What still needs to be done? And I understand from looking at your Facebook page, if people want to say that they were a part of making this happen, you would welcome their help to get everything completed and ready to drop the green flag.
Absolutely. We're out definitely every weekend with helpers, as much volunteers as much as we can. We're out during the week as well. At this point, most of the big stuff, I would say, is pretty much done. We're mm-hmm. still doing a lot of things, a little bit with fence here, a little bit with lights there, a little bit with concessions there. There's still an awful lot to do. But we're getting there.
A lot of little things that you find, those little details that have to be taken care of. It's real easy to say, okay, these are all the big things, but then all of a sudden the little things start to pile up.
Absolutely.
And tickets, by the way, tickets are on sale now for these events that we mentioned, June, August, and October. That is one way to make sure that you're ready, is to put a deadline on it. You put tickets up for sale, you get commitments from the drivers, you got a deadline for sure.
Absolutely. That's as I said, the good, better, best model. It may not be perfect for June 14th, but we're going to be here and the lights are going to be on, and we're really excited to have the racers on the track.
So how do folks get tickets?
The tickets for June 14th, the general admission tickets are available at myracepass.com. So search for Millstream Speedway and they'll be available there. We will, of course, also have tickets at the door. We will have adult tickets at $25, seniors and military at $22, youth at $18. Pit passes will be $40, and those will be available at the door.
All right, very good. Again, a lot of anticipation building for the return to racing at Millstream Speedway, and co-owner Beth Cogley with us this morning. Beth, thanks very much for taking the time. Best of luck in putting all of the finishing touches ahead of the June opening, and here's to a great season.
Thanks so much for having me.
It was a big news story this week in both politics and business. President Biden's announcement of billions of dollars in stiff new tariffs on a wide range of Chinese-made tech and renewable energy products. Things like electric vehicles, batteries, solar panels, microchips, aluminum, and more. Republicans were quick to point out that Joe Biden was among the harshest critics of President Trump when he levied similar tariffs on his watch. Now, to be fair, Mr. Trump also slapped tariffs on aluminum and steel imports from Europe, not just China. But you can bet that both sides are going to try and spin this to their advantage in the upcoming election. Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown, who is locked in a heated battle to retain his seat in November, was actually among the few Democrats who supported the Trump tariffs at the time. And yesterday, we asked him for his take on President Biden's change of heart. Senator, you were one of the very few members of your party who actually praised then-President Trump a few years ago when he levied significant tariffs on Chinese goods being imported into this country, when many in your party were critical of that. So I'm curious your thoughts this week when President Biden announced his own tariffs on Chinese tech and renewable energy imports into this country from China. What are your thoughts on Mr. Biden's apparent epiphany on this?
Yeah, I've taken on presidents of both parties, from Bush up through Biden, on bad trade policy, because it undermines American workers. And, you know, whether it's Toledo or my hometown of Mansfield or Findlay or Tiffin or wherever, I will keep doing that. I called on President Biden to strengthen those tariffs that had come down from President Trump. He's doing that. I want to see more. I want to see more, especially on solar and on electric vehicles, because the Chinese are cheating on solar. We know that directly hurts a company in Northwest Ohio. First Solar is the largest solar manufacturer in the United States, and I want to see them continuing to hire more people. And I'm concerned about electric vehicles, about China flooding the electric vehicle market by dumping their cars and selling them below cost, made with low-wage Chinese labor, with no environmental rules, all of that. I want to make sure that American jobs are protected. So I call on the administration, good step, but do more. We can't do any of this. We as much as we're now investing in an industrial policy, something Congress hasn't done and a president hasn't done in decades, we're doing that, but we've got to enforce trade law or it doesn't work.
What about the argument that all this really does is end up raising prices for consumers?
Well, I think Trump and Biden both realize that tariffs work to protect American jobs. We've seen when we've had a government, presidents of both parties, and I fought presidents of both parties on this, when we've had presidents and Congresses too often at the beck and call of corporate interests, we saw far too much job loss. When I went to Johnny Appleseed Junior High in Mansfield, Ohio. I was there with the sons and daughters of a whole lot of auto workers and steel workers and electricians and laborers and operating engineers and machinists. Mm-hmm. And those jobs disappeared because corporations were moving first south to look for lower wages and then push bad trade agreements through Congress.
On a kind of a related note, you have actually introduced legislation that would kind of take this theme one step further, restricting the outsourcing of call center jobs overseas. Certainly, that has been a trend in recent years. Tell us about why this is important, more about this legislation, why you feel it is important.
Yeah, we've seen this movie before when American companies think they can make more money. Government should not assist them to move overseas. And too often, foreign-owned companies or American-owned companies that just want more to make more money will shut down production in this country and move it overseas. And we're seeing that with call centers. And I think Americans want to know when they call in on a consumer product or whatever they're calling in on it to a call center, that they get Americans answering the phone, and that American workers have these jobs.
You also make the point that there are security risks involved with this outsourcing of call center operations.
Yeah, there continue to be on a whole host of issues security risks. China's more aggressive, technology's more advanced. You know, whether it's a call center or whether it's an electric vehicle, where there are national security implications, and that's got to be front and center on this, as jobs in Northwest Ohio and all over the state are front and center.
It's a question of who's got our data and what are they doing with it. And I think that's something that will resonate with a lot of folks, again, with that call center legislation that maybe we haven't considered.
Yeah, it's really about freedom. It's about privacy. People don't want government. They don't want other countries to have their personal data. That's why on all of these issues, we consider privacy, we consider freedom, we consider national security. And front and center for me, through the dignity of work, it's always about jobs.
Again, Senator Sherrod Brown with us this morning. We'll follow this as it makes its way through the process here. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Always. Thanks.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
This is how you know you're having a bad week. If you've had a bad week, this may make you feel a little bit better, because no matter how bad your week, and I was mentioning a little bit earlier that I've had a very long week this week. Not necessarily a bad week, just a long week. But if you've had a bad week, this may make you feel better, because no matter how bad it is, it couldn't possibly be any worse than this. The former minority leader in the House of Representatives in the state of West Virginia, the West Virginia State Legislature, Doug Scaff is his name. He is in the hospital after having been bitten by not one, but two copperhead snakes on Wednesday. Mr. Scaff was taking down campaign signs along U.S. Route 119 in Boone County when he stepped on the snakes. One of them bit him on his little toe. The second snake caught him in the calf. His leg is swollen and very sore, and he will remain that way until all of the venom can be drained from his system. But the good news is he's going to be okay. Bitten by two copperhead snakes while he was taking down campaign signs. This happened a day after he lost his bid to become Secretary of State in the Tuesday election. So he loses his race. And as he's taking down his campaign signs, he gets bitten by two rattlesnakes. That is a bad week. right there. I'm glad it'll be okay, but that is a bad week. No matter how bad your week has been, just feel better that you know it could always be worse. Man, you talk about adding insult to injury. Glad he's okay. Our dumb criminals of the day in the broken news this morning. Candidate number one, the Kentucky man who has been charged with fentanyl trafficking after allegedly trying to double-cross authorities while making a controlled drug purchase. Jeremiah Allison was making a drug buy undercover for authorities during an investigation. They're going to make a drug bust. So he agreed to make this drug purchase for the cops. Police saw him purchase 8 fentanyl pills, but when it came time to turn over the contraband to the officers, he only turned over 5 of them. Did he not know that they had him on video getting 8 of the pills? He turned over 5 of them. Apparently, he said he gave 2 of the pills to his roommate for rent in exchange for the rent. He was arrested and charged with trafficking. So they got the original drug dealers busted in the sting, and then they got him as well. So that's dumb criminal number one. Candidate number two is the man from New York, the Hudson Valley, Tyler Williams, who faces arson charges for allegedly setting fire to the home of a state trooper. The father of a state trooper. It wasn't even the state trooper's home. He set fire to the home of the state trooper's father. Apparently, Mr. Williams was upset that he had been given traffic violation tickets by the trooper a few months ago. And that's how he decided to get even. All righty then. Not too bright. Let's see. Not too difficult to find a motive in that case. And then dumb criminal candidate number 3, actually number 3 and 4. It's a pair of genius criminals here. Man and a woman who are facing charges after allegedly getting caught with a stolen cash register in West Seattle. The Seattle Police Department says officers arrested a 20-year-old woman and a 40-year-old man following the incident at a pharmacy. Back at the end of April, police, they observed the woman carrying a stolen cash register out of the pharmacy. They caught her red-handed. She stole not only the money in the cash register, she stole the entire cash register. The gentleman was with the woman, and both attempted to run away. Well, he attempted to run away while she was being arrested. He ditched her, or tried to. Police caught up and arrested him. She was charged with stolen merchandise for the cash register, and he had an illegal handgun. So, stole the entire cash register there. That's... speaking of criminal charges, this is not a dumb criminal, but beware. If you ever visit Thailand and you go to a restaurant and receive less than stellar service, might want to think twice before posting a negative review. A 21-year-old man from Great Britain, Alexander is his name, don't have his last name, but Alexander was arrested in Thailand for allegedly leaving a restaurant a number of one-star reviews. Left a number of one-star reviews. Now, in his case, they were fake reviews, and that's really what was what raised the ire of the authorities. The owner of the restaurant says Alexander simply passed through. He didn't actually order anything. He was not a paying customer. Shortly after booting the guy out of the restaurant for loitering, the Google rating for the restaurant fell from 4.8 to just over 3. Alexander was responsible for multiple fake reviews that lowered their Google rating. He was charged with entering false information into a computer system in a way that is likely to cause damage to others, but which is not an offense of defamation, according to the Criminal Code of Thailand. Get this, he now faces up to 2 years in jail, leaving a negative review, multiple negative reviews, restaurant in Thailand. Wow. take this seriously in Thailand. My goodness. And finally, in the broken news this morning, I love a story with a happy ending. And here it is. This is out of Owensboro, Kentucky. A homeless dog looking for a new shelter has found one in a rather unlikely place. The executive director of a homeless shelter had heard residents ask about the shelter getting a pet. When he saw the basset hound up for adoption at the local animal shelter, Harry Pedigo knew it would be a perfect fit. Toby, the basset hound, is 2 years old and has made a big impact at the homeless shelter. He says the dog lifts up people's moods and provides comfort and support for those who have found themselves without a permanent residence. So the homeless dog found a home at the homeless shelter for people, and it's a happy ending for all involved. Isn't that awesome? It's really cool. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is the sound of a popular American motorcycle. It's the sound of freedom, the open road, really good times. And this is what it sounds like with a drunk guy in it. How do you like the sound of that? Cops are cracking down on drunk motorcycle riders. If you ride drunk, you will get caught and you will get arrested. Drunk riding. Over the limit, under arrest. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Transportation.
Time now for your daily download. The numbers behind the news. The statistics that shape our lives. It is graduation season. A lot of college graduates have already received their diplomas, ready to head out into the real world. The fastest growing job markets for entry-level employees are drawing recent college graduates to the Sun Belt. This is according to new data from LinkedIn. The top 10 rising metros for new graduates are concentrated in the Sun Belt around cities like Tucson, Arizona, Tallahassee, Gainesville, Florida, Chattanooga, Savannah, Georgia, Des Moines, Iowa is kind of an outlier from that, and Birmingham, Alabama. So the vast majority in the South, Des Moines being the notable exception. Industries on hiring sprees for entry-level workers include manufacturing, government, education, and healthcare. 71% of global business leaders, I thought this was kind of interesting, 71% of global business leaders, according to this data from LinkedIn, say that they would prefer to hire a candidate with less experience but more AI skills rather than more experienced candidates without skills in artificial intelligence. That is how big of an impact AI is making in the workforce today. And you think, boy, it's hard to get a job unless you have experience, but it's hard to get experience without having a job is the classic conundrum for new college graduates. Well, AI skills in artificial intelligence are the biggest factor in leveling that playing field. 71%, vast majority of business leaders say they would prefer to hire a candidate with less experience but more AI skills rather than the other way around. Now, having mentioned all of that, the hot places for first-time job seekers, entry-level job seekers, a new study from WalletHub is showing that the best place in the U.S. to start a career is Atlanta, Georgia. They studied data on professional opportunities and quality of life of 180-plus cities around the country. 182 of the largest cities in the U.S. And again, it's not just in their data, in WalletHub's data, it's not just where the opportunities are, but where the top quality of life is. So balancing those two out, because, of course, for young people especially, this is very important, balancing quality of life with business and career opportunities. Atlanta came in at number one with special emphasis on high growth in median household income. The city also has many job opportunities that are considered highly rated. Again, Sunbelt area down in the South. So that is consistent with the LinkedIn data in that regard. The rest of the top five after Atlanta, Orlando, Salt Lake City, Tampa, and Pittsburgh, rounding out the top five cities for best places to start a career, according to WalletHub. Cincinnati is tops among Ohio cities at number 33, incidentally. Columbus ranks 62nd overall. Toledo is 145th out of 182. And New York City is the place that comes in dead last on WalletHub's list. So if you're a recent grad or know someone who is looking to start their career, those are the best places to do it, apparently. My wife, Kyra, has joined us in the studio with another collection of tasty recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. No recipes involving cicadas in the collection. I don't know if you saw this story on the Newswire.
You know, bugs.
The cicadas, there are, I guess, multiple broods in parts of the country that are emerging at the same time.
Right.
So you've got this cicada apocalypse that is going not for us.
Wow, we've got a lot going on this year.
This is not in our part of the country. I think mostly in the east and mid-south,
okay,
I believe.
Well, they can stay there.
Is where the cicadas, and they have literally millions of them. Yeah. And they're not dangerous. They're not, harmful. They do kind of sound cool. I mean, it's the sound of summer and all of that, right? But it's a huge invasion. And then, of course, they die and the cicada carcasses are everywhere.
Yes.
So a gentleman by the name of Zach Lehman, he is with the New Orleans Audubon Insectarium. He is the curator of animal collections for the Audubon Insectarium.
Okay.
And he has been coming up with some interesting or gross, depending on how you look at it, culinary treats featuring cicadas.
Okay.
Among them.
Well, there is what? Chocolate covered.
Yeah, grasshoppers and things like that. Right. Yeah. So this is so he has a green salad recipe with apple, almonds, blueberry vinaigrette, and roasted cicadas. If that's not your cup of bugs,
nope.
He says he does dragonflies in a similar manner. So So what exactly do cooked cicadas taste like, you may ask? According to the Associated Press, the flavor resembles toasted seeds or nuts.
Okay.
So, toasted nuts.
Toasted nuts. So, let's toast some bugs and see what happens.
I'm just saying, no cicadas in the recipe collection today.
No. I can't.
What we do have for you today, I just thought I would share because I saw that on the Newswire.
Well,
if you want to pick it up. I want to pick up that cookbook. You're looking for any unique ideas for recipes.
Nope.
What we have for you today, though, is much more delectable, much more traditional. It is a cheesy ranch potato and sausage bake, right?
I'm sorry.
Are you thinking about these again?
I'm thinking about eating bugs and talking about recipes now.
No bugs in today's recipes.
No bugs, I promise.
Cheesy ranch potatoes and sausage bake.
So four large potatoes cubed, one 14-ounce package of smoked skinless sausage sliced, one cup of shredded cheddar cheese, half a cup of ranch dressing, one onion chopped, two cloves of garlic minced, one teaspoon of paprika, salt and pepper to taste, and two tablespoons of olive oil. So preheat your oven to 375 degrees. In a large mixing bowl, combine your cubed potatoes, your sliced sausage, chopped onion, minced garlic, paprika, salt, and pepper. Drizzle that with olive oil and the ranch dressing. Then toss and coat everything evenly. Transfer the mixture to a baking dish. Spread it out evenly. Bake in your preheat oven for 25 to 30 minutes or until the potatoes are tender. Sprinkle your shredded cheddar cheese over the top and return to the oven. Bake for an additional 5 to 10 minutes. till the cheese is nice and melted and yummy and bubbly.
Boy,
and
that
enjoy.
Sounds great.
Yes.
If you are a meat and potatoes kind of kind of guy like I am, that is, you're in heaven right there. To go along with that, you have tortilla cheesy garlic bread.
Yes. So this was one that I saw on Instagram.
Okay.
So it was one of those, probably a TikTok video.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, this sounds really interesting.
Garlic bread, but with tortillas.
Yes.
Okay.
So 3 tablespoons of butter, 1 tablespoon of minced garlic, Italian seasoning to taste, 3 medium tortillas, and shredded mozzarella cheese. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Mix the butter and the garlic together in a small bowl. Spread garlic butter on the tortillas and then sprinkle some Italian seasoning and cheese. Top with another tortilla. Repeat that. So keep repeating that step.
So you're layering
these. Yes, you're layering the tortillas. And then place it on a cookie sheet and place in the oven on the middle shelf. Allow the tortilla to bake for about 10 minutes or so. Remove with some tongs and slice with a pizza cutter and enjoy.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Tortilla, cheesy garlic bread. Really easy to make.
Yeah, really easy to make. And if you need multiple, then, you know. Yeah. Just get a big package of tortillas and
you're good to go.
Yes.
Let's see here. And for dessert, we have a strawberry earthquake cake.
Yes.
The earthquake cake. All right.
1 box of white cake mix, 1 cup of fresh strawberries chopped, 1 package of 8-ounce cream cheese softened, 1/2 cup of unsalted butter melted, 4 cups of powdered sugar, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 cup of coconut flakes, and 1/2 cup of white chocolate chips. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Grease a 9 by 13 inch baking dish. Prepare the cake mix according to the package instructions. Gently fold in your chopped strawberries. Pour the batter into your prepared baking dish. Then in a medium bowl, beat together your cream cheese, your butter, your powdered sugar, and your vanilla extract until smooth. Drop the cream cheese mixture with the spoon over the cake batter. Sprinkle with your coconut flakes and your white chocolate chips. Bake for 40 to 45 minutes or until the cake is set and the edges are golden brown. And allow the cake to cool before serving. And the big thing about this is that cream cheese and the coconut and all the chocolate chips, it kind of has like a crunchy topping on it after it's done baking. Yeah.
Interesting.
So strawberry, so kind of looks like, you know, I don't know, just the broken up earth. So that's where the earthquake comes in.
So that's why it's called the earthquake cake.
Yes.
The, excuse me, I'm all choked up. The strawberry earthquake cake, the tortilla cheesy garlic bread, and the cheesy ranch potatoes and sausage recipes are all posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. If you don't follow the Facebook page, make sure you go and follow the page for all of the recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. And if you have one that you would like to share, by all means, you can share it there on the Facebook page. You can also email us your recipes if you have one that you would like to share. Always love getting new recipes.
Oh, yes. For sure.
goodmornings@wfin.com. Good mornings, all one word with an S on the end. goodmornings@wfin.com. If you want to send those recipes, or you can message Kyra from the Facebook page, or post the recipe there on the Facebook page. Also, if you do something unique with one of the recipes,
if you change something up,
tweak it. Find a way to make it a little unique. Obviously, share that as well. Love to hear about all of those things. Again, at Kyra's Kitchen.
Even adding some bugs. Don't know if I will do it, but if you
are
say
brave
it's
enough,
good, I trust you.
If you are brave enough, at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. We also have the link posted on our webpage at goodmornings.net. And my wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that, of course, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, over the past decade and a half, One Energy has grown from a local alternative energy company into one of the country's leading state-of-the-art industrial power solutions innovators. And they're about to launch the next chapter in their success story with a new name and listing on the New York Stock Exchange. CEO and founder Jeremy Kent will join us. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.